How many people didn't come to the two nights? Okay, good. Alright. So what we've been doing around the world is this idea of 2+3. And, I started out giving Buddhist talks in New York, right? And then, I don't know, the first night, 6 people came. In 1903, I think. I don't remember. And then it got up to, I don't know, maybe it got up to 100 people. But then one night, we decided to give a business talk, and like a couple hundred people came. And then I told you, when you give a talk about finding a partner, you get 800 people. But what we thought was, at some point in my life, I thought that the ideas that we were taught in the monastery, the ideas that we were taught to use in the monastery, and in the Dhammapada Sutra, and that we used in starting our business, they can be used by anybody, you know? You don't have to be a Buddhist, or you don't have to be, you know? You don't have to be on a spiritual path to follow those principles and to succeed in your life. So then it occurred to me, because we were on our way to mainland China, and I was asked to give a talk at Beijing University, you know? And then I thought, what if the ideas were just divorced from all of the religious paraphernalia? You see what I mean? What if you just presented the ideas that people could use in their own life to succeed in their own life? And it doesn't matter that you have Tibetan prayer plans or you have Buddhist images or like that. You know, what if you just gave talks about the ideas and people could use it in their own lives, in their own way? Because I was in Galway, Ireland, and an Irish guy came up to me, Kevin Thornton, right? And he said, the first time I went to Galway, if you were there, Dublin, who was there? Yeah. So yeah, we had a talk in a nunnery in Dublin, right? And then this Irish guy came up to me and he said, I have to talk to you. And I was wearing my robes. And he took me out in the garden with Tom Finn. And he said, Mr. Roach, this Buddhist thing, this monk thing, this robe thing is not going to work in Ireland. You know, can't be wearing robes in Ireland. You know, it's just not going to work. You know, and I don't think it's appropriate, especially in the nunnery. You know, and he gave me a really hard time. I didn't know what to say exactly. Later, he is now the president of the ACI in Galway. he's the head of the group in all Ireland. And but it made me think that what if you just presented the ideas and you didn't worry about the religious stuff? Because what he said to me later, he said, you know, Geshe-la, can I still have my daughter marry in the cathedral? You know, and I said, well, of course. You know, it doesn't matter to me where you have your daughter married. He said, yeah, because you can't have your daughter married in the basement with a 6-arm blue-iron guy, you know. And so that's a cultural thing, you know. That's what you grew up with, and maybe you should keep it. The Dalai Lama often says, you know, just keep the things you grew up with, they're okay. You know, you don't have to change a big thing. It's not which picture is on your altar. It doesn't matter. Whatever you like, whatever is good for you, that's okay. They're all, in the end, they're all the same. Tartu, tepa, chipa, say. Tartu, tepa, chipa. Tartu, tepa, chipa. In the end, the whole path is one. That's a very big subject in Buddhist scripture. In the Prajnaparamita service. In the end, it all comes down to one. So it doesn't, in the end, if you're a Christian, you seek to meet Jesus. If you're a Muslim, you seek to have a direct experience of Muhammad and Allah. And, you know, it doesn't matter. It doesn't really matter. You will. And it's not like Vajrayogini exists, but Allah doesn't, or something like that. You know, it's not like that. They all exist. And you find them, and you reach them, and that's okay. The big thing is, how do you view your life? How you conduct your life? And where can you learn from any one path to have a successful life? Right? If you're successful in your life, then whatever image you want to have in your house, it's okay. So I think what we have been doing around the world then, and for example in mainland China, is just talking about how to be successful in your life and every part of your life. And we talked the last 2 nights, so we designed this thing called 2+3. We do 2 evening talks, maybe in Beijing City. We gave them at a public auditorium in Beijing City. And just random people came, and I think in China, a random group means 1,000 or 2,000 people came. And then we said, if you're interested, then come on a retreat with us. If these ideas are interesting to you for those 2 nights, then come on a retreat with us for 2 days, and we'll teach you how to go deeper. Okay? So we're starting that program of 2+3, and we're sort of trying to pick the cities in the world where we'd like to do it, because we think we can only do 10 or 15 cities in the world. And what we'd like to do is keep coming back to the same cities for 12 levels. We have 12 levels of the program. So it would be with Big Taipei and Hong Kong, Singapore, probably Berlin, and Buenos Aires, and Montreal. And, you know, we picked 10 or 12 cities like that. And the idea is to keep the same group and expand the group as we go, and go through 12 levels of a diamond cutter training. So this is sort of what happened with this talk. We gave a presentation in Vietnam, and then the Vietnamese community in LA said, can you do a talk for 3,000 people? So I said, okay, that's all right. Then they canceled it. Then I don't like to cancel things. So I said, I'm coming to LA anyway. But we didn't have time to do the whole 2+3. So we don't have time for 3 full-day retreat with you. We did the 2 nights of talks, and this would normally be a 3-day retreat, but we had other pressures on the schedule. And as I spoke about the last 2 nights, one of the most exciting of those is that British Airways has asked us to give diamond cutter trainings for their staff, which is 40,000 people. And so we'll start, we had to go last week to London and arrange for those to meet the ownership and the unions, and they liked it. And then we'll go back in October and start training the first group in the two nights will be 400 employees of their company. So even though we don't, this is so, what I'm saying is this is not a full DCI training. It's sort of a dessert from the 2 nights. You will get a certificate by being here, but I think we have to redo the first level when we come back. Okay? So if we can fit LA in, the 10 or 15 cities for it, it'll take 7 years, 6 or 7 years, and we'll see how it feels after, you know, the dust clears. I like LA. I was born in Santa Monica, and I like it. Feels good to me. So I thought today, we don't have time to go through the whole diamond cutter 3-day training, but I thought we would do some important parts of it, alright? And the last 2 nights, we've been talking about, and then I had a very beautiful luncheon with 6 or 7 people. We had a really nice luncheon. We tried an experiment of having a small luncheon and restricting it to 6 people. And they could ask any question they wanted about their life. And we went in depth for a couple of hours. And it was really nice. I had a really to me, it was a very important time and a good time. And we talked about the, you know, people reach stages in their life where they have a change in their life. And it's happening a lot more in nowadays because of the economy. So people are having drastic changes in their life. A lot of people are losing their house, or they're having to leave their house that they have. A lot of people are losing their job. A lot of people are having to retrain to a new job. And that's global. That's happening. You know, we travel. I think we see more trends in the world than almost anybody, because nobody has time to travel the amount that we do. We're in a new country every few days. So I think out of all these presidential advisors and everything, we're just plain old people, but we're constantly going to different countries all year. So we have a touch on the pulse of the world in a way that I think not many other people have. And the challenges that we're facing in our lives, because of the economy, but also because people are aging. You know, the world is older than it was 20 years ago. You know, in every country, in Europe, the birth rate is declining. There are more people in their 40s and 50s than younger people. Just, we call it gross numbers, you know, net numbers. There's fewer people under 20 than over 40. So people are reaching also an age in their life when they want to make life changes. They have gone through their productive money-making years. You expend your energy in a career, and you make your money. And then sometime around 45 or something, it hits you that you want to do something deeper with the rest of your time. And if your money's okay, your kids are older, the house is taken care of, and it's also a question of a new period in your life. So people are having a new period in their life because of the economy, and then people are having new lives because of their age. People are reaching an age where they want to try some deeper part. I think it may be subconsciously because we see death on the horizon. You know, I know that's not popular to talk about, but I think it may have to do with you're more aware of your mortality when you're 40 than you are when you're 20.
Right.
And then you begin to think, is there something deeper I can do with my life? And so what I'm saying is a lot of people are going through changes. Then over lunch, we were talking about those challenges. You know, some of the people at lunch were changing their job. Some of the people at lunch were having their children leave home. Some of the people were, you know, deciding what to do with those changes, you see, and how do you deal with those changes. And then in each case, and it's maybe the nature of things, in each case, each person gave me a decision to decide for them. You see, they were like, should I do this with my kids, or should I do this with my kids? Should I do this with my career, should I do this with my career? And then we say, Your worldview starts to slide. Your understanding of life starts to slide. Someone presents you with two choices, you know, and then your mind goes to the two choices, and you're struggling with those two choices. And you really want to help this person, and you want to be sensitive, you want to hear what they need. And they're asking you, should I do this or should I do that, right? And then a diamond cutter trained person has an alarm should go off in your mind. And you say, wait, decisions are wrong. Okay? Decisions are wrong. Anytime you are faced with two options, something's wrong already. Okay? Why? If you had played your karmic cards right, if you had played these cards well, there wouldn't be a decision right now, because you would already be successful. You know, the thing you're trying to decide about, should I do this job or should I do that job? Or should I live here or should I live there? Or should I do this with my kids or should I do that with my kids? You don't have to make that decision if everything's successful already. Standing, decisions come when there are questions of succeeding or not succeeding. If something is succeeding, you don't ask about it. If nobody says, I won the lottery yesterday, why me? You know, people ask when they have a problem. So decisions are a sign that if the thing had already happened successfully, there wouldn't be a question of a decision to be made. And in the Diamond Cutter system, the way to resolve all problems, the way to resolve all challenges is internal. Okay? You don't discuss it with someone, you don't try to convince anybody, you don't have a choice between moving here or moving there. You face decisions with the understanding that the world is coming from seeds in your own mind. You face decisions with the understanding that the world is coming from seeds in your own mind. So rather than manipulating external events and people, rather than trying to manipulate your boss or your employee or your son and get them in the right place, you go inside and you manipulate the seeds in your own mind. It's like manipulating the source code for a computer program. So rather than typing things in the screen, you open up the computer and you address the source code. And then you close it, and then the picture you want comes up automatically. At that point, it's automatic. So you're not dealing with external objects. You're dealing with your own mind. And that means you don't have to argue with anybody. And you don't have to make any decisions between that place and this place. They just come. What you want just comes. Because you dealt with the source code. You changed the source code. You went to the seeds in your own mind. And you changed it. Okay? And you made things happen from the inside of your own mind. Because, and then I'll demonstrate that things are coming from your mind. Okay? The people who were there the last 2 nights, they saw that right here in Detroit, or you know, something like that. I don't have it. Yeah. Okay. A lot of you saw this already. It doesn't hurt to see it again. My teacher said, when you see it 3,000 times, you understand it. So some of you still have 2,950. We're going to try to demonstrate, without meditation, without New Age philosophy, without, you know, mystical means, just by simple thinking, we're going to try to demonstrate that the world is coming from seed in your life. Okay? And as you see it presented, if it's my 50th time, my teacher, he gave classes all week. He gave classes every night. And for 20 years. And he had, on Thursday nights, he had a rookie class. He called it the rookie class because he got addicted to baseball. And he claimed he was learning English. I said, look at you, you know, these other English things, they speak in a native thing. It's not like the whole range of English, American English, you know, there's other words, but they won't be using. But this whole, he learned English at 55, he started almost at 60, he started learning English. And so his whole vocabulary was baseball. Like, he'd say, we're going to have a doubleheader class tonight. You know, if you really catch this, you'll be hitting a home run. Tonight, we're teaching the rookies, right? So, we had a, his whole language was funny. And so we had a rookie class, and he would teach the alphabet. He would teach the Tibetan alphabet, A, B, C, D. So I would go, you know, I never missed a class. I don't think I ever missed a class. I would go to the alphabet class after finishing my geshe. And because then at that point, I was watching how did he teach it. You see, how does he teach the alphabet? This master teacher. You know, so I would watch him and I would learn about how to teach. So at some point, in your 50th 10 explanation, your mind, and the minds of everyone here. We talked about it at lunch, right? With Jason. You have to morph into a teacher at some point, okay? I have a problem because I want to give these business talks with business leaders. But every time I interest them in this approach, they end up selling their company and becoming a teacher. My method of learning, right? So anyway, just anticipate that if what we're saying is correct, then you will want to teach it to someone else. So as you learn the material, learn how it's taught at the same time. Because I can see everybody in the room teaching it. You see? In your own country or wherever you live, you see? There's a dire shortage of people who understand these things. We're like a large city with one doctor. And it's not good. It's a very bad situation. There should be many, many teachers. They should be different from each other. Some should be tall, some should be short, some should be from Mexico, some should be from Canada, you see? And because there are all kinds of patients, and they need different kinds of doctors. And our experience with the older staff here, we go to a place like, I don't know, Vienna, last spring, and then we gave these talks. And each person was able to give the presentation a little bit differently. And then different people in the audience were attracted to different people. So it kind of broke up into little groupings. So as I go through the pen thing, think about, in the back of your mind, think, how would I teach that? If I had to explain that to somebody, how would I adjust it to my friends? You know, my friends are not exactly like the people you're talking to. So how would I present it? So if you've already seen this 50 times, then start watching how it's taught and start thinking how you would do it. Okay, ready? What is this thing? You can say it's a pen, okay? And we're going to talk tonight here about what happened in the last 2 seconds. When I held this up and you thought pen, some very complicated processes happening in your mind. Some very extraordinary things are happening in your mind for you to see it and for you to recognize it. And we'll talk about that tonight. But for now, we can say, yes, I see it. You see it as a pen. This is a pen. If a dog came in here and I waved it in front of the dog, especially if it was a puppy, what would they do with this object? Yeah, I mean, they would grab it in their mouth. And I used to have a dog, Annie Thomas dog, and we used to bring the dog to the lecture, to this lecture. And it was a lot more powerful, but it's kind of complicated to bring the dog in. So, the dog would grab the object in its mouth. So we can say that I, as a human, see this as a pen, and the dog sees it as something to chew. And then there are certain questions you have to ask. There are certain standard questions you should ask about that. First question being, who's right? The dog or the human? Which one is right? Who's right? Both. You can say both. Don't be afraid, okay? Just answer. And don't try to think the right answer. Just say it. They're both right. But you can't say that the human is more correct than the dog. And then the next question would be, if I left this object on the stage, and if we all went home, right? And if there were no people, and if there were no dogs in this room, then what would it be? Would it be a pen or would it be a chew toy? She said neither. And that's fine. Right? There's nobody to write with it. There's no one to chew on. So we can say it's, at that moment it's neither. It's neither one. So a question for you. When I wave this object in front of the dog, right? Does it have any idea that it's a pet? It doesn't come to the dog's mind. Okay? Which proves something, you see? That means that Pen is not coming from this thing to the dog. Okay? There's nothing announcing pen in this thing. It's not saying, apparently it's not saying I'm a pen. The dog comes in, the dog looks at it, and it's not that something is coming from the object to the dog, and the dog says, oh, that's a pen. It's not announcing its penness, okay? But does it have penness?
Yes.
It does. You can use it as a pen. It must have some penness in it, okay? If the penness doesn't exist inside of it from the beginning, where is the penness coming from? Is it coming this way? Where is it coming this way? Yeah. And those of you who know Tibetan, there's a word called sirpom. What's sirpom? You know sirpom? It's an unusual Tibetan word. What is sirpom?
Sirpom is the person who thinks it's coming this way.
Yeah. Sur means coming this way. Tom means sees it that way. Someone who sees it coming this way is also called Shiva. What's Shiva? It's an infant. Okay? Someone who believes that the thing is coming this way is in the game of life. Even if they're 17 years old, they are an infant. They are like a child. If they think the thing is coming this way, they are like a child. And their life will be as though it were being run by a child, an infant, a three-year-old. We say three-year-old in the pejorative, right? We say, oh, you're acting like a three-year-old. Maybe that's a better translation. You know? But people who think that the pen is coming this way, they are three-year-olds. Okay, got it? So, is the pen coming this way? You can say that. I think there's something in me is putting pen on it. Something in me is making it a pen. And then you have to get into what is it in my mind that's making me see it as a pen? Okay? What is it in the mind that I'm putting on the object? You know, where does that come from? And then you have to say there's some kind of energy or there's some kind of seed in the mind. Okay, there's some kind of seed that's been planted in the mind and it's seeing this thing as a pen. That seed was planted and then that seed opens and I see it as a pen. Now, next question, okay? Is it voluntary? Is that something you decided to do? No, I have this, I went like this, and then I went like this, and your mind said pen. And you didn't have time to think about it, right? You just looked at it and said pen. It looked like it was pen out there. It looked like it was already a pen, and you just saw it as a pen. Right? Now we know that's not true. Okay? I held up a purple object, and then in a millisecond, your mind put a pen on it. I held up a purple object, and in a millisecond, your mind had a picture of the pen and it posted on the pen. Okay? Like, what do you call those things? Overhead projector transparency. Like a transparency. It drew pen. And then it put that idea on this purple object. And then it was so fast that you said pen. You thought, and it's so fast that you think the pen is already a pen. But it wasn't. It was just a purple thing. If it was already a pen, the dog would have seen a pen. Okay? That's all. It wasn't already a pen. I held up something, your mind had an image, and you put the image on the pen, and you declared it a pen. Okay? That's how the pen came to be. So it's a seed in your mind that's making a pen. By the way, is this whole thing just Buddhist philosophy? You know? Are we just talking some Buddhist philosophy? You know? And there's a lot of places in the world. You go to the center and they ring a bell and they song. You ring a drum and you play a drum and then, you know, the guy gets up and says, guess what? Nothing's what we thought. And they explain it for a while, and then everybody goes home. And I always used to get really upset at that. Even very high on teaching, they would talk about how the world is and what you thought, and, you know, and they would, you would nod, and then they would say, okay, that's the end of the lecture. And then you'd go home. And then there was no, how do you say it? There was no application to your real life, you see? It was very, very frustrating to me. You know, you would go to Buddhist teaching, they would say, guess what, nothing's how you thought it was. You know? And then they'd say, do you realize this pen is coming from you? And you'd say, that's cool. And then they'd say, okay, that's the energy. It didn't seem to, the sales pitch was, the original sales pitch was, this is going to save your life. Or this is going to change your life. You know, and then you got, it was interesting, you know. I remember I went to a talk by a Harvard professor in Dharamsala in 1973. And he got up in the library of Tibet, right? And he got up and said, all of those of you who are having trouble with people of the opposite sex, you know, like, if you're like trying to keep a celibate lifestyle, and you find women attractive, don't worry. It's just thoughts. They're just dots, pixels. They're pixels. You know, just think about pixels and you'll be okay. You know, and I'm like, you know, I tried it, and nothing, it didn't work at all. So, you know, I'm halfway through the pen thing, right? But what I want to stop and pause and say, if you get it, you can use it for anything. If you get it, you can use it to achieve anything, right? And, you know, we had lunch today, and some of the people said, look, Geshe-la, I'm not after money. You know, I'm comfortable. I don't need money particularly. You know, I'm happy. I have some money, and it's enough for me. And you're talking about how to make, what, $250 million. Personally, I don't need it, you know. But I do want a partner, you know. Tell me how to make a partner. In China, China's a weird place because you get married young. Your parents normally set up your marriage. And then you have all these tensions and frustrations between married people that they're not allowed to talk about it. In the country, you know, to their family or their friends, it's not considered proper to complain about your husband. But then you get them, if a foreigner comes and does a business seminar, and then you have a breakout group, it just becomes a husband examination session in like 5 minutes. Within 5 minutes, they're all like, look, I can't say this to my family. You know, my husband really bugs me. What can I do all the time? I think everybody has something they want. You see? You have a goal in your life, right? You have something you would like. You have a main thing you want, and then you have other things that you want. You have, some people would like to have, they seriously would like to have a relationship. Some people would like to have a certain kind of career. You know, they'd like to have a certain kind of successful career. Some people would like to have a health problem, or they have a physical problem, and they'd like to change it. And everybody has something, I think. Or I know very, very depressed people who have no goals in life and they don't get out of bed. They stay in bed all day. Even I've met some very wealthy people who they're depressed. I met one of the wealthiest people in the world who was studying with me for a while. And there were days when she wouldn't get out of bed because she was so depressed. And she said, there's nothing to live for. Right? But since you did get out of bed, unless you're sleeping here, I don't know. You have something you want. You have something you're thinking of in your life. There's something in your life that you would like to reach. There's something that you would like to achieve. If you understand the ten thing, you can achieve it. Okay? If you understand the ten thing, you can achieve it. And then there's a problem with us because of the way we grew up and because of the way we were taught to get things or make things happen, that we have learned to limit our dream. We have learned to limit what we want, you know? Like, you could say, I could say, would you like to have a nice partner? And you say, yes, you know? And would you like them to be the most handsome guy in LA? And you say, no, I don't think that's possible, you know? He could just be in the middle somewhere. It's okay. Or, you know, would you like to have a better income? And you say, yeah, if I could add $2,000 a year, that would be good. See, you put limits on things because according to what you know, more is not possible. Right? My husband has this habit, you know, and I would like to improve that habit. I don't think I could remove it forever. But you can. You see, with this system, nothing is not possible. Okay? Because it depends. So, I encourage you during this couple of hours time, a lot of the time, the frustrating thing about when I meet people and talk to them and teach them is that they have given up on their number one goal. They're like on number three, you know. Like, it's not going to happen that I'm going to act in a major motion picture now. You know, I can't even get a job on, a popular TV show. You got it? And then you have to stop that. If you're going to play with me, you have to stop that. You have to think what you really want. You know, decide what you really want. And then we'll talk about it. Then we'll continue with the pen. All right? So in the back of your mind, what would you like to happen in your life? Sometimes my teacher used to ask me, what do you want? And then I'd be like, I didn't think about it. You know? And you have to think what you want. So, the pen is not coming this way, the pen is coming that way, because there's some kind of force in my mind to see it that way. Okay? And we've established that even though it's coming from my mind, it's not under my conscious control. I cannot switch out that image and switch in another image at will. Not possible. Does this pen come from your own mind? Yes. Since it's coming from your mind, can you decide to see it some other way? And you know, that's called positive, what do you call it? Thinking, this is normal, whatever. No, there's like this. There's like this viewpoint that if I could be positive enough, I could see whatever I want. And I say that's not true. I don't believe that. Many of us have fierce desires to have something happen in our life. And we make fierce prayers in our mind for something to happen in our life. And it doesn't happen. Right? It doesn't seem to... It comes from your mind, but it doesn't matter that you want it so much. You don't seem to be under your current control. What pops out of your mind seems to pop out of your mind and not be planned. Okay? And it doesn't seem that you can plan things. This could be a different object. But right now, my mind is being forced to see it in this way. That's all. My mind, the picture I'm laying on it is being forced. It doesn't seem to be up to my conscious control. That's why we give into the idea of seeds, alright? There's a power in your mind. An idea has come out of your mind. A seed has opened in your mind for a pen. And that's why you see a pen, alright? Tonight we'll talk about you can go like 10 levels deeper at that point. That's gonna be something, I've only given that teaching once or twice. Because it's too much for people. So I'm not gonna go there now. But the idea is, a seed was planted in your mind to see a pen. A seed was planted in the dog's mind to see something to chew on. Where did that seed come from? How is that seed put in the mind, right? If you understand that process, then you're on the way to getting what you want in your life, okay? And by the way, I say money and health and a partner, but also in my own mind and deep inside your mind, you would like to see a world where there's no war, or there's no hunger, or there's no racism. You would like to see a world where there's no violence in the world. And that's also the pen, okay? So your finances are the same as the pen. Marital status is the same as the pen. Your health is the same as the pen. But also Iran, Afghanistan, you know, the condition of global warming, these are all also coming from the mind. Okay, so don't be small. In Tibetan they say Namka Pan. Say Namka? They say jump across the sky. You know, they say jump across the sky. It means think big. You know, like don't, you can have money and you can have health. But you can also stop global warming. Okay? And you can stop racism. And you can stop hunger. because all objects are the same. It's not like small objects are coming to the mind, but bigger ones are not. It's not like the pen is coming from your mind, but your leg is not. Okay? You know, we think that, right? You get into that idea. I can affect my health, my kidney, but I couldn't change global warming using mental suits. But that's also coming from your mind. That's also coming from your mind. Alright. So we have to become Kshetra Kavach. Tathat Kshetra Kavach. In the Yoga Sutra, it says, we must become as gardeners. We must become like gardeners. You plant. You become an expert at planting the seeds you want in your mind. You can go out to my students bought me a house after 100 years of teaching them for free. They said, Geshe-la, you know, we're finishing your course. We're buying your house. And they bought me a house. But it was a little nice house. It's up on a mesa. It's really beautiful. I'm a quarter of a mesa. So when I lay down, it's a French window. You see to the weekend. When I lay down, you see stars on your level. You see? And it's really beautiful. So there's a little patch of land before the cliff. You know, there's just this little patch of land. And I wanted to grow roses. I had this dream to grow roses. Because I never tried it in my whole life. I thought, now I want to grow roses. Now I have time for it. So I thought, I can't go out on that. It was an incredible piece of dirt. It's really extraordinary dirt there. It's 90% rocks. You dig with a shovel, and there's a big huge rock. And then you pull that rock out, and another one jumps up. You know, it's like they're being pushed up in the middle of the earth. And I make Irish walls around my garden, because it's all rock, you know. And I pull all the rocks out, and there's no dirt left. There's just big holes everywhere. And you can't go out the first day and say, I want roses. You know, you have a vision in your mind of a rose garden. And you know, like grass is growing between and some California golden poppies and some morning glories and some lantana. I'm learning all these things. And you can't go out and say, garden, and it just pops out of the ground, right? You need to think about it. You have to have a vision in your mind, right? It's a very beautiful process. You imagine what you would like to have in the front yard, the front rock. And it's tiny, okay? It's just tiny. And you imagine what you would like to have, and then you start planting, right? That's all you can do. You can't command roses to be there, okay? You have a vision in your mind of a very beautiful garden, you know? Modest garden, small garden. I don't want to be wandering all day. You know, I want a small, modest, beautiful English garden in the middle of them. And you can't go out there and say English garden and it just pops up. It doesn't work like that, and you know that. You know that with plants. But you have to realize it's the same with mental seeds, okay? You want to make money, you know. And people, if you don't know me, there's like one person in the room who doesn't know me, okay? My lama at some point said, make a business to help the Tibetan refugees. And I said, I'm not interested in business and I don't know anything about business. And he said, okay, you're starting one. And then I said, well, how am I going to learn what to do? He said, here's the Diamond Kata Sutra. It's 2,500 years old. You're going to use this as your business plan. You know? So I take this book. This book is like an acid trip. This book is incomprehensible. You know? It's like, it's a discussion between the Buddha and who's it, Subhuti. And the Buddha says, Subhuti, you think it would be good if someone saved all the people in the world? And Subhuti says, yes. And then the Buddha says, well, do you think there exist people in the world? And Subhuti says, no. And the Buddha says, well, how can you save the people in the world if you think they don't exist? And Subhuti says, I didn't say they didn't exist. So the Buddha says, well, then they do exist. And Subhuti says, no, they don't. And then the Buddha says, why do you think they don't exist? And then Subhuti says, if the people in the world existed, you couldn't save them. And it's like that. It doesn't make any sense. Okay? The book doesn't make any sense. He hands me a 2,500-year-old book that doesn't make any sense. He ships me off to Manhattan on a naked transit bus. and so start a business, you know? And now it's $250,000 a year, okay? It, we built it to $259, and it was bought last year by Warren Buffett, okay? So what I'm saying is that you can have a vision of something that you'd like to happen, but it's not going to happen just by saying it, right? I can't go out to the front yard and say, there should be a garden here, right? It would be foolish. If I said to you, you know, last month, I went out to the rock front yard, and I said English garden, and it was there. You know, now you would say he's even more cuckoo than I thought, you know? And then if I said, I cleared all the rocks, I brought in this old lady, Rose expert from McGuireville, and she told me how to plant the roses and which roses to buy and how to take care of them. And then we sat down together on the porch, and she said there's going to be a redwood over there, there's going to be a climb over there, there's going to be a lavender one over there. And then Yalsei dumped this rose on you, and then Jigme dumped a rose on you, and the English rose.
You asked for it.
Doing good, by the way. So anyway, you know, and then you plant them. And then you set up your sprinkler tank, your drip system tank, and then you wait. You know? And it's kind of cool because I travel a lot, right? So I planted all the roses, I set up, and the other flowers, and I set up the timer, and I set up the drip system, and I left for China, you know? And then I came back, and these sprouts are everywhere, you know, and that's cool. Then I left for Vienna, and I came back in 10 days, and, you know, things are happening. And now, this month, the last time I was there, about two weeks ago, it's an English garden. It's a real English garden, and it's beautiful. It's stunning. You know, she planted it right, and it was just the bare dirt, and there were little sprouts. And now everywhere is beautiful. You know, all this little, not just one garden, but there's sub-gardens, right? There's all these sub-gardens that have a theme. You know, like gold and lavender and purple, and it's beautiful. And then there's, you know, herbs. She planted herbs here and there, so the scent at night is great. So I just did the planting. And then I got sure that the water would be there, and I left, right? And what I'm suggesting is, if you learn to plant mental seeds, if you get into the mental seed business, you can do the same. Okay? It's a very, very exciting process. Someone teaches you how to plant the right seeds. Then you just relax. You see? You plant the seeds, you take care of the maintenance, the watering, whatever it is in the mind, right? And then you just go to China, or you go to Vienna. And you come home and there's this huge garden. It's a beautiful garden, you know. And I give flowers away, but there's hundreds of flowers. There's hundreds of roses growing. And I didn't have to be there. God, you do the planting, you do the design. To do the design, you have to know what you want, right? I wanted an English garden. And so you have to decide what you want. So that's your job. I can't do that for you. And don't be chintzy. Okay, don't be cheap. Don't say, oh, I want to make $100 or, you know. Our company doubled every year for 15 years. It's impossible. It's not physically possible. Try to hire double the employees every year and train them. It's not physically possible. You can't go from 100 employees to 200 employees and train 100 and then do 400 the next year. It's not physically possible. But don't let that bother you. I mean, think of something that you really want. And then we have to design it. And then you have to plant it. And then you relax. And there's no more struggle. I worked 4 days a week, 6 months a year. At the end, it was 6 months a year. I was out for 6 months a year. It grew from 100 to 250 while I was out for 6 months a year. Okay? It's like the garden. You see, you do the planting properly. You take care of the watering. You have somebody water. And you relax. And what I'm saying is that if you use the mental seeds method, which, by the way, is the only one that works anyway. It's a lot more relaxing. You just plant them, and then you relax, and the thing comes out. Whether you want it or not, by the way, you'll get what you plant, and you're going to have to live with that, so decide what you want. You know, like somebody gave me a, I forget what it's called, it was called a, what do they call that thing in New Orleans, the parade?
Mardi Gras.
It was called a Mardi Gras, okay? And, you know, I saw the picture on the seat thing, but I kind of didn't register. And it's like a red rose with these white spots and splotches everywhere and stripes. And I was like, okay, they gave it to me, I'll plant it, you know. And now I have to live with this thing. In the middle of the garden, I have Mardi Gras roses, you know, and they're really ugly. The buds refuse to eat them. So they're the only ones that, you know. What I'm saying is be careful what you ask for, right? Like, think carefully what you want, okay? But then you just plant the seed. So we talked about it yesterday. You brought me $85. Did you remember that? You didn't spend it, right? Give me I did take it home, but we're going to talk about how seeds are planted, right? So for money. If, even if you don't care about money, just learn how to make money, because it'll come in handy. Alright? And you can give it away if you don't want it. Alright? So, the way you plant a seed in your mind for money is to hand money, offer money to other people. Under controlled circumstances. Under controlled circumstances. With technique. You must understand the technique, and you must follow the technique, you know? If I had ignored my rose teacher's advice, I set the timer to once a week. It's deep watering once a week. Then the roots go deep, and in the desert they don't die. If you water it the way a new person would want to water it, which is every day, you kill them. You see, it looks like the right thing to do. They should get a lot of water every day. Then you water them every day, they get lazy, the roots come up to the surface, and then they die. The rose falls over. You see, so you have to listen to the technique. She said, start it. Make it want water. And then give it water once a week. And it will dig, 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 and then it will become strong. You see, so you have to follow the technique. If you don't follow the technique, you screw up. Even if you thought you knew the technique, okay? So, listen. Okay, so with technique means, when you hand five, because you know people who give people money and they're broke all the time, right? You know that. I don't have to tell you that. You know people who are generous and they're broke all the time. Okay? You know people who helped the sick and they got cancer last year. So they weren't using tech. They weren't doing technique. They weren't doing it right. So anyway, when you give the money to a person who needs it under certain conditions, you see yourself giving. See? Your hand releases the money and your mind is watching your hand. You see? Your eye is watching your hand. And your mind is watching your eye, right? In Tibet, they call it Su, Mi, and Miki Namo Shewa. Your hand, $5, is going into the other hand. Your eyes registering the changing colors, and your mind is interpreting the changing colors. Oh, I have just given $5 to somebody else. When your mind thinks, I have just given $5 to someone else, a seed is planted in your mind. Okay? And if that seed is properly cared for, like the Mardi Gras rose, okay, it must grow. And it must produce a Mardi Gras rose. Okay? If the seed isn't abused, and if it's watered properly, and if the fertilizer is there, and the sunlight is there, if all the conditions are there. There's a debate in Buddhism. There's a debate. It's a very beautiful debate. It's like Nyuku Sakuta, and then Nyuku Gimuku Tsukena, then Zamun Nanda Kam Tina, Tima Nela. There's a huge debate in Buddhism, you know, Buddhist logic, in Amaravartika. You'll get to it someday. If you plant a seed, and if you water it properly, and if it has the appropriate fertilizer, and if the sun is on it well, no force in the universe can stop it. Nothing can stop it. And then there's this counter debate, you know. Yeah, but a crow just landed and he's picking the seed up. You know? What about that? You see? He's picking the seed out of the ground. He's like, pecking at the feet and pulling out of them. There's huge debate in Buddhism. But in general, without considering crows, if you plant a mental seed, if you give someone money with technique, you cannot prevent the money from coming. People are always asking me, it seems selfish to give money with the intention of getting money back. You're not intending to get money back, you're just recognizing the laws of nature. You can't stop it. You can't stop the money from coming back. You can say, I don't want the money. And that's okay, you can take the money and give it away, it's alright, but it's gonna come. You can't stop it. If you put the rose there, and if you water it properly, and the sun is there, it's gonna, and the deers don't come, it's gonna grow. You can't stop it. What you do with it is your business. If you want to give it away, that's okay. If you give money with proper technique, you can't stop it. It will come. And I gave an example in class, I like this example. Half of you heard it 1,000 times, some of you didn't hear it. I was in a yoga class in New York. A guy came up to me after the class, he shook my hand, it was John Shear, okay? He shook my hand, he said, I didn't know him, I never met him. He shook my hand and he said, I want to just thank you for what you're doing. I'm like, okay, thank you. And I was in silence at the time, so, you know, I couldn't ask him his name. And then he wrote me an email after a week. He got my email address, I don't know how, it's not so mysterious. And it's Geshe Michael Gina, okay, if you need it. And then he said, why didn't you thank me? And I wrote him back and I said, for what? You know, I don't know what, you know, I enjoyed meeting you and was I supposed to thank you for shaking my head? And he said, no, he said, look at your bag, look at your backpack. So I look at the backpack, right? I'm thinking, my backpack is a pretty weird place to be into. There's all kinds of stuff in there. And then down at the bottom, here's this envelope. And in the envelope, there's a $100,000 check. Okay? I didn't work for it. Right? I didn't put in 80 hours or 90 hours or 500 hours or a year of work. Right? It just came. Like a rose growing from the ground that you planted and you watered it. So what I'm saying is that if you give someone money with technique, it will come to you and you can't stop it. There's a beautiful line in the Bible. Jesus is entering Jerusalem, you know the story? He's on a mule, right? The Jewish sponsors of his arrival to Jerusalem have warned him not to enter the city on a stallion, on a horse, because he will be perceived as challenging the Romans. And, you know, because everyone's saying he's a king. And so they said the best way you can get killed, Jesus, is to enter Jerusalem on a horse. Let's put you on a donkey. And then there won't be any misunderstanding with the Roman soldiers that you're trying to set yourself up as a rebel leader or something. So he enters Jerusalem on a donkey, at the advice of his disciples. And then you know the story, that's where Palm Sunday came from. People are throwing palm leaves on the ground in front of him. And then they're saying Hosanna, and they're calling him Messiah, the anointed one, right? And, which is to say he's royal, and he's the new king. And he turned his disciples' logic and play. And they say, look, you know, we raised the donkey. Didn't you understand what we're trying to do? We're trying to keep you from being killed. You know, so tell the people to stop yelling, oh, king. You know, tell the people to chill out a little bit. If the Romans hear this, what you're being said about you, you'll be killed, you know. And he turns to them and he says, if I ask them to stop, let me cry. I can ask them to stop calling me king. But if they stop, then the stones of the street will start seeing the same thing. See, I can ask them to stop calling me Messiah. But if they stop, then the stones of the earth, and the stones of the street, the brick of the street is going to be seeing the same thing. So let's leave it. Okay, it's very beautiful. It means if you plant the seeds for money, you can't stop it. You know, it will come. Some guy will I didn't see him do it. He got it in my backpack. He could have taken my wallet. But he put $100,000 in the wallet, you know? And that paid for the water system at Diamond, okay? All the cabins, the fence tree and the tree. He withdrew 20,000 support, but it was 80,000, and that paid for all the water at our university, all the water system. So you can't prevent the seed from happening. If you plant the seed for a partner, right? If you plant the seed for a partner by serving a lonely person, right? Which is the seed for a partner. If you plant a seed for a partner by serving a lonely person, they will come and you can't stop it. Okay? They will come to you and you can't stop it. And you know, people come up to me and say, should I go on the internet to meet somebody? Or should I go to a yoga class? You know, yoga class is not really good. I was in yoga class yesterday. Mercedes was inviting me this morning. She said, guess what, you don't have any boys in that class? I said, no, she said two. You know, there's like 100 people there. And I'm like, yeah, that's pretty good. So people ask me, should I go to a yoga class or should I go online to meet somebody, you know? And then I'm like, no, you should go to a nursing home. And you should try to meet an old person who's lonely. And you take care of them. And that's like planting the roses. That's like planting the roses. Then go back on the porch, relax, you know, drink some Fiji water, and the thing will grow. You know, and you can't stop it. And a partner will come and knock on your door. Okay? A partner will come and knock on your door. You can go on the internet if you want it, but it will work. You can go to a yoga class if you want, it will work. Or you can stay at home and not cry and smile, and she will knock on the door. Because you can't stop it. You see? You won't be able to stop it at that point. So it's really, that's the idea, okay? You plant the proper seeds like the garden at my house. I call it Rainbow House, okay? I was trying to find a place to rent for a retreat, and I went there the first day, and there were four rainbows touching. Two full rainbows, two double rainbows touching. I was like, oh man, this is the place, you know? And we call it Rainbow House. So you can, it's like the garden at Rainbow House. You plant the right seeds, and then you just relax, okay? So that's the general pitch. You heard that, okay? And there's tricks to making it faster, to making it happen faster, because there's a ripening process in the mind. You know, some plants, roses, you plant them in January. They bloom by May in Arizona. And you can't really speed it up, you see? And there's other, you plant an iris and you have to wait a year, right? And there's just a time for each plant and for each thing you want in your life. There's a proper time that it takes in the ground. And you can't, you know, don't expect there not to be a time that you need to wait, you know? I mean, it would be foolish to, in January, to demand rose blooms. Because they're just sticks at that point. And they need to grow a little bit, and they need to ripen a little bit. So it would be foolish to demand, you know, to plant. I did the first year. You know, I planted the California golden poppy. And I was like, man, nothing's happening, you know? And I would go out every day and dig up the mulch and check under the mulch. And there was nothing going on. And then finally, there's this, you know how before the seed, the leaf splits, one leaf comes up. And I'm like, God, there's nothing happening, you know? And my friends are all telling me, they come up in June, guess what? And I'm like, yeah, but I already planted them. And I watered them. I put so much water in them, you know? And there's a time, right? It takes a certain amount of time. And you have to. But the cool thing about mental seeds is that you can speed it up. Okay? You can speed. You can make it faster. By certain ways. So I'll talk about one and then we'll take a break, okay? This week I've already been talking about money, and I've been talking about how to find a partner. You help lonely people. I've been talking about how to get healthy, and you try to find a sick person. You. And then I was, where were we? You were in Detroit. And Do you remember some guy? I think it was the guy who does the organic gardens. What's his name? He has an interesting name.
River.
But he jumped up this third day and he said, "Oh, Geshe-la, Eureka, you know, I found it." And I'm like, "What?" And he says, "I found the person I need, you know." And I said, "What?" And he says, "They are lonely, they are sick, and they're broke." And it's the guy's name, he has long hair. He was cute. He was really cute. He was yeah, it was River. His name was River. His name was River. And he was so cute. He says, "I killed three birds with one stone. I'm going to be rich, and I'm going to be healthy." And so now you know all that stuff. You know? I think today I'd like to do three things. Okay. I'm kind of bored talking about money, relationships, and health. And today in the lunch, some people were asking about their next career. You know, like, what will be my next career? How do I... We were talking about passion. We were talking about passion. And in my life, I've had the good luck to have a passion in my whole life. And then I meet people who are sort of aimless, or they don't really know what they want to do. And so they're kind of like, I don't know, floundering in their life, and they're not sure what they want. And it's one thing to talk about planting your future garden, right, in your mind, your future reality. But it's a different thing to, what's the seed for having a purpose in your life? You know, what's the seed for having a sense of purpose? And what's the seed for developing a new passion, especially later in life? Let's say you're 40 or you're 50, and you know, You did your first passion in life, and you did it. You know, you're good at that, and you did it for 20 years or 10 years. And it was me in the diamond business. I used to go during my lunch hour with a phone book to the park behind the public library on 5th Avenue and 42nd with the Lions. I used to take a phone book out with me to lunch and sit and write down the names of diamond dealers in New York and try to memorize them and their addresses. You know, like, I was that passionate, you know. And then, like, 20 years later, I'm like, oh, not another bag of loss, you know. And, you know, they all look the same. And so I thought it'd be interesting, since we were talking about retraining this week, right? How could you, especially later in your life, develop an uncontrollable new passion, a passion for something, you know? And that would be fun. You know, that would be something beautiful if suddenly, later in your life, you unearthed... You see, in the old language, you would say, I'm unearthing a passion that I have, that I didn't know about. In the diamond cutter language, you would say, I'm designing a new passion for the later part of my life. I'm designing my new passion for the later part of my life. So I thought we would take that example, rather than money, health, and girlfriend, okay? Because I already told you that. You want money, you get money, okay? You got that. You want health, you help sick people. You want a girlfriend, you go to the nursing home, okay? That's straight. Let's talk about passion. You know, how can I develop a new and enduring and meaningful passion later in my life? You know, like, how can I rekindle the kind of passion for life that I had when I was 20, when I would take the phone book to the park behind the Fifth Avenue library? You know what I mean? So, I would like to talk about that. And I think we take a break first. Okay? This goes to what time? Let's see. Yeah, I suggest we take a little break. And we're going to talk about three things, okay? What is the seed to develop a new passion in your life and to rekindle your interest in life at an age, especially at a later age? And then secondly, what are ways to make that seed grow faster and more powerfully? And then the reading you have in your hand is something I translated, I think, 10 years ago or 15 years ago. It's a, you have in your being existing seeds which are connected, which are blocking the new seeds. It's like the rocks in my rainbow house. It's like, they're beautiful rocks, okay? They're nice, round, white rocks. They're about this big. And they are everywhere on the ground. You can't go half an inch without hitting one, you know? And they will block your garden. You see? There are existing seeds in your heart that you have planted there over the course of your life, which are like the rocks at rainbow house. And they are sitting there under the ground, and they are hungry for them. And is there a fast way to dig those out before we start the process of planting? So we're going to cover what are the seeds for a new passion in your life. How do you grow them fast and strong? And then how do you take the rocks out to give them a chance to grow? Because the existing seeds can block the old ones. The new ones. So we'll cover those three. So one thing, take a break. Have some refreshments. I'll sit here. And if you have a personal question to ask, or you just want to say hi, or you want to book time, something like that, or you have any kind of issue in your life, come up, ask me quickly, get to the point quickly. I'll tell you the answer quickly. And then let the next person come, because we don't have that much time. All right? Okay. Thanks. Have some nice refreshments. Seeds for developing a passion, especially later in life, a new passion. And then secondly, how can we make those seeds grow faster and stronger? And then thirdly, how can we take the rocks out? How can we remove old seeds which are blocking it? Okay? Because you can teach someone about the seeds, for example, for making money. But if they have an old mind lama, right? I forgot to tell you, it wasn't just baseball, it was football. Okay? So when he was giving this teaching, he said, "Oh, you have to plant the right seeds, you know? And then you have to get rid of the blockers, you know?" He says, "There are blockers in your mind, and they are blocking your good seeds, you know? And you have to like tackle the blockers." You know? So we'll talk about how to tackle blockers. First thing, the seed for identifying, we're not going to say identify your passion, right? For creating your passion in life, especially a new passion in your life, it's very beautiful. It is rejoicing in other people's achievements, recognizing other people's achievements. Right? And there's a human tendency to be jealous when other people are successful, right? So we tend to do the opposite. We hear somebody's really successful, and then we feel unhappy about their success. Somebody else makes a better documentary than we would make, you know? And then we feel jealous of them, or we feel unhappy. And then if you go to the grocery store and you see those magazines on the near the grocery checkout, and they're all about rich people's problems and movie stars' problems, and everyone takes a real interest in this, you see? Everybody, even me. You know, I'm sitting here, "Oh, look at Zsa Zsa Gabor, she looks so old," you know? And we do that, okay? So you have to fight those seeds. You have to plant new seeds. So the way to plant a new seed to develop a passion in your life is to be happy about other people's achievements and look for other people's successes around you and acknowledge them and share those successes with them. So we took it to an extreme in my company. We took it to a real extreme. You know, if you're in the diamond business or jewelry business, we have trade shows. We have to go to trade shows. So there's Las Vegas trade show in February. There's New York Javits Center trade show in like April, and then there's Basel, Switzerland show, and then you go to Rome for the show.
And you know, you have to go to these shows like every 2 months, you know? And then all of your other competitors will be there. And they each have their own booth, right? They all have their own booth. And then you try to hire new people, so they wander over to their booth and steal ideas from them, you see? And because they know what you look like. And you can't do that. So in this system, in order to develop a new passion, or a new product for that matter, okay? To find new products. If you're in a company and you want to find new products, you would, in the trade show, you would go over to the competitor's booth and you would ask them to see what's the new stuff they're doing. You know, what's the new stuff you're doing? And they would show you the new stuff they're doing. And then you would praise them. And you would congratulate them. And you would take them out to dinner and say, you're doing better stuff than I can. You know, I can't believe it. You guys are so creative. You have such a passion for what you do. And I really appreciate what you're doing. And it's amazing. And I congratulate you. And I used to go to the factories. Our factories, for medical supplies, Shenzhen, right? China. For diamond jewelry, it's called the SEEPS, the Santa Cruz Electrical Export Production Zone. SEEPS, outside of Mumbai, outside of Bombay. And it's a huge, small city of jewelry factories. And you go there, and you spend a couple weeks there, and you go around to each factory and you say, what do you got that's new? And they show you what they got that's new. And then you just praise them, and you thank them, and you say, you guys are amazing. You know, you guys are doing great stuff. And you make this a way of life, okay? Rather than competing with your competitor, rather than being unhappy about other people's successes and achievements, you consciously look for other people's successes and you make it a way of life that you're constantly congratulating them and thanking them, okay? Like that. And it's not natural to a human being. It's unnatural to a human being when someone is competing with you for anything. To go and thank them and congratulate them and try to see what they're doing right. You know, because normally you hate them. The more competitive you are and the more pressure they're putting on you, you tend to dislike them. So in this system, you fight that and you turn it around. And the people who are competition for you, the people, you look for their successes. You go home and try to make lists of what they're doing right. And it applies to everything. It applies to personal relationships. You, instead of concentrating on what your competitor is doing wrong and the qualities about your competitor that you don't like, you try to change your mind around to congratulate them and be happy. Okay? Is this just some noble thing? Is it just a good thing to do? You know? Is it just that it makes you a more peaceful and happy person? It will. It will make you more peaceful, it will make you more happy, and it's moral, and it's kind, and it's compassionate. But hey, it makes you successful, okay? I mean, I'm trying to sell you that. It will make you more successful. If you keep up, consciously, the practice of recognizing the successes, especially of people that you're competing with, you will find your passion. A new passion will come to you. It's very weird. It's really weird, okay? It's not natural, it's counterintuitive, and it works, okay? So it's just something amazing will happen to you, and you will find new passions in your life, right? And you will never be without passion. Like, I think it's one of the saddest things to lose your passion for life, and lose the passion for your occupation, or the things you do. You know, and if you keep up this practice of celebrating other people's successes, by the way, it doesn't have to be in your chosen field. Okay, you don't have to be always happy about other people's drug delivery equipment. You know what I mean? It could be. I tell people when I was taught this practice by my teacher that. You were still using libraries to do research, you know? Like, we wanted to build a sidewalk around the temple. I didn't have the money to hire anybody. He said, my lama used to do this weird thing. He'd say, the boiler downstairs, the furnace boiler, we were in New Jersey, it was cold, snow, right? He said, the boiler broke yesterday. I said, okay. He says, you fix it. You know? I said, I never saw a boiler in my life. I'm from Arizona. He said, you know, he said, you go, you fix. You know, you go library, you get book. You come, you fix. You American, it made America. You know? And, you know, and he'd say, you know, and I'd say, okay. And I would go fix this thing, but in those days you had to go to the library to do this research, you know? You had to go there if you wanted to learn how to do something. So you can get to a point where any kind of success of another person. So I used to go to the library, and then something happened. Starbucks opened, right? And Barnes and Noble's opened. Barnes and Noble's opened up. And the my library was kind of a lousy library. And then I was in the monastery for, I don't know, 15 years, right? And then I went out one day. I didn't go out. I never went out. I went out once for my brother's funeral. And I went out once for Thanksgiving at Dieter's house. And that was it. You know, for many years. And then, so I went to this, they said, I need a book, you know, they said, go to Barnes & Noble's. So I went to Barnes & Noble's, you know, and there was a cafe there, you know, and I went to the order a hot chocolate, you know, and I said, I'll take a hot chocolate. And they're like, would you like that with soy milk? Half and half, 2%, skim, non-fat, whole milk. Or would you rather, you know, rice cream scalded, what do you call it? When they burn the milk slightly? Steamed rice cream. And I'm like, whoa, you know. I'm like, I just want a hot chocolate, you know. And you want grande or venti? And I'm like, is grande big, right? They said, where are you from? And grande is medium. And I'm like, grandiose medium. And then they said, you can sit down over there and you can read a magazine, you know? And I'm like, no, I'm not going to touch the magazines because you'll have to pay for it. And they said, no, this is a new system, you know? You just take the magazines and you abuse them, you know? You take magazines off the rack and you just read them, and you spill hot chocolate on them, and you crease them, and you crinkle them, and then you leave, and we clean up everything, and you don't have to pay anything, and you can sit here all day, after buying one grande, medium, and you can read magazines all day, and you don't have to pay anything, you know. And I'm like, I go back to the monastery, you know. I went back to Rinpoche's room, you know, and I went upstairs, and I said, I sat down on the carpet, you know, and I'm like, Rinpoche. He's like, what? I said, you wouldn't believe what's happening in America, you know. In the old bookstores that I used to go to, they wouldn't let you open the book, you know. They had the book shrink-wrapped. And you'd say, could I see the book? And they'd say, no, you know. And if you approach the door with a coffee in your hand, you know, there'd be like three guys would jump out and stop you from coming in, you know. And then I said, something weird is happening in America. They'd tell you to come in. They give you hot chocolate in 16 different kinds of milk. And then they say, open all the books and spill anything you want on them, you know. And then leave and we'll take care of everything. And you can stay all day. And he said, sit down on my couch, you know. He had this couch. Have you ever been in his room? It's a handmade couch. Art had it handmade. It's a handmade couch. It's golden threads. With silk and golden threads, okay? I don't know what they spent on it, but it was an offering from a student. My teacher wouldn't buy bread. He would make his own bread so that he could save 13 cents for the monasteries in India. That's how he raised money. He would not buy bread, okay? But somebody gave him this couch. So there was a rule in the house, you couldn't sit on this couch. You couldn't even look at this couch, you know? And then he's like, come over here, have a cup of tea, Tibetan tea, you know, butter, salt, baking soda, nutmeg. And then you sit on the couch and you have Tibetan tea. And I'm like, Rinpoche, I know you don't allow that. He says, do it. You know? And he says, you sit on the couch. And he says, now I want you to do rejoicing meditation, which is how you develop a passion. You see? He's saying, you do a rejoicing meditation on my, I'm letting you sit on my couch. In fact, I want you to lay on my couch, lay down in the lion's pose. Do you know the lion's pose? It's on your left side. You sit down on your left side, you put your arm under here, and you drink your tea like this, because that's how the Buddha died. And you're supposed to stay on your left side for like an hour and drink your tea. And it's supposed to be good luck or something. And he's like, you take the lion's pose on my couch. I'm like, are you sure? And I, you know, because it's hard not to spill when you're doing the lion's pose. He's like, yeah, and you drink the Tibetan tea on my couch. And then you do rejoicing meditation. So I'm like, what is that? You know, and he says, now you saw that new bookstore. You saw this new idea of a bookstore where anybody can get anything they want to drink and they can use any book they want and they don't have to buy it and they can leave. Or they can stay all day and read a book, you know? And it's like heaven for me, you know? And he said, you sit on my couch in the lion's pose, you drink the Tibetan tea, and be happy. Just be happy. And I said, what? He said, be happy about this new bookstore. And the people who brought it to you, you know, some company, the people thought of the idea, and they raised the money. Hundreds and thousands of people worked to build that building, and to put the books there, and to have all the 18 kinds of milk. And you just be happy about them, what they've done. And passion will come in your heart. You know? Be happy about what cool things somebody else is doing. So if you want to have a passion that you didn't have before, or your life doesn't have a spark, or your life doesn't have this passion that you used to have before, just relax in a chair, easy chair, have a cup of hot whatever you like, and think about the cool stuff that's happening in the world. Just think about the cool stuff that's happening around you and thank them. In your mind, thank them. Say, thank you. There are thousands of people who work at Barnes & Noble in the corporate side, right, who have designed these stores, which have replaced the libraries. And a lot of the churches, too. People go there on Sunday. And just be happy. And then that plants a seed in your mind for passion. Okay? That plants a seed in your mind for passion. So I have half hour to teach you how to make it faster, and then how to take the blockers out, how to tackle the blockers. Okay, so here's how to make it faster, and we did this in the yoga studio yesterday. And if you had that already, I'm sorry, but you can learn how to teach it. Okay, so please say shi, sampa, jorwa, tartu. Shi, sampa, jorwa, tartu. If you want to make any seed grow faster, these are the four steps you have to take. Okay, these are four ways of making a seed grow faster. Okay, let's say in the case of a seed for passion. Okay, like I want my, we call bakchak sepa or kam sepa. Say kam. Sepa. Bakchak. Sepa. Sepa is a very rare verb in Tibetan that means a karmic seed pops open prematurely, faster than it should have. It's like you plant the rose and then a week later it's got roses on it already. You know, that's called bakchak sepa. Bakchak means a seed. So I'm trying to explain how to speed up the process. You would plant the roses. You know, roses, they're shipped as what they call canes. Canes are just like 12 inches long, and they have little bit of roots, and there's nothing else. There's no branches, there's no nut, they're just sticks. And I'm talking about how to plant a cane and have roses in a week, okay? This is shi sampa jorwa tartu. So shi means do your action towards an important person. Okay, do your action towards an important person. If you're giving money, let it be towards an important person. If you're helping a lonely person, let it be an important person. If you're helping the sick, let it be an important person. What does important person mean? There are like five categories, okay, of important person. Number one is your mother and your father, okay, which means someone who has helped you in the past, okay. If you give financial assistance to someone who has given you major help in the past, the seed grows much, much faster. Okay? If you have a choice of where to put your money, right? You have $100, and you have a choice about who to give it to, and it's between your parents and your friend, give it to your parents. Because the karma will ripen faster. The seed will ripen faster, because they have helped you so much. And then in America, you have to debate with people, you know, why your parents are nice, even if they're not nice. And, you know, I'm not going to get into that. Your mother risked her life to bring you into this world. That's enough. Okay? She knew there was a decent chance she might die, and she chose to bury you. That's enough. If she became creepy later, that's all right. Okay? That's enough. Any action taken towards your mother or father is faster. If you have a choice, choose your parents or anyone else who has rendered you major assistance, like high school teachers or coaches or, you know, anyone who's given you major assistance in your life, then the seed will go faster, okay? Second, a person in great need, okay? A person who's in great need. So, someone who's really poor is better than someone who already has some money. You know, you give money to one person, they can go out to lunch, to dinner tonight. You give money to the other person, they can feed their children. You give to the second one. You see what I mean? Like that. They say there's a special power about giving assistance to people who have no other alternative. They have no other, what do you call it? Resource. Option to draw from. No one else is going to help them. They are too ugly, too irritating, too stupid. Too poor, too, you know, they're the people that nobody wants to help. There's like sexy people, like Tibetan monasteries are like, if you go to a party and people say, who are you donating to? And you say, you know, Dalai Lama's monastery, they're like, that's cool, you know. But if you say, you know, I'm helping this guy down the street who's everyone can see is repulsive. And he smells bad, and you know he's deranged, he's slightly crazy, and you say I'm putting my effort into this person. You don't get much social credit, you know, but there's no one else who wants to help them. They're not a sexy project to help. They're an unpleasant project to help. You get more. The karma is faster. The karma will ripen faster. Okay. Another kind of way to speed up the seed is to assist a person who impacts on a lot of other people. Okay? And the classic example in the scripture is a doctor. Okay? So you could, if you have a choice between donating or assisting in the building of a clinic, say, as opposed to just giving money to a poor person, then you should go for the clinic. Because the clinic will help 100 poor people. You see what I mean? So you're looking for people who impact other people. So you go for the people, help the people who have the most impact on other people. And then the seed grows faster. So these are generally some guidelines about be selective about who you plant your seed with. By the way, as you may have noticed, you need another person to plant your seeds. You need other people. Other people are like the ground at Rainbow House, at my house. They are like the ground. Without other people, you can't plant your seeds. So in Buddhist scripture, Dangni Simjin Tamje La Yishin Norbo Leha Be Duncho Dupe Sambe Itatuche Pa Zimbersho. Now you know what that verse is. What is that verse? Where does that verse come from?
8 verses.
This is an inside joke. What?
The 8 verses.
Yeah, the 8 verses. Okay. It comes from the 8 verses. It's the first verse of the most famous Lojong. Text for training in developing a good heart. And it says, other people are priceless. Other people are priceless. Why? You can't collect karma without them. You can't plant a seed without other people. they're like the earth. You know, try to grow a rose without earth. It's, planting a seed without other people, without interacting with other people, is like trying to grow a rose without earth. You see? Without soil. It's not really possible. You can do, you know, you can put it in water and see what happens, but it's not going to be, you need other people. So then now you treat problematic people in your life as fantastic opportunities. You see? If you become a karmaist, a seed planterist, then you start to view other people in a different way. Someone introduces you to someone, they are irritating, you know, they are demanding, they are unhelpful, and you're like, wow, great, you know, I found more earth to plant my seed. You know, I have someone that I can use, you know, basically you can use them to plant your seeds, okay? So you, a real seed planter expert is happy when they meet new people who are going to require a lot of work, okay? Because that's better soil, okay? All right. Second, samba is the state of mind with which you undertake this action, okay? That you give the money or you congratulate for their success, or it's the state of mind with which you do it, okay? There are three parts of that. One is called kunlong. Kunlong means what's the motivation you have, okay? With what motivation are you giving money? With what motivation are you congratulating someone for success, for a good job? You know, Kat did this last night. And instead of being jealous, you say that, you know, that was cool, okay? Like that. So kunlong means, what is your motivation for congratulating them? You see? What do you want out of this? You see? And ideally, people get into this choice, you know? I shouldn't be self-interested, you know? I should congratulate them for the sake of congratulating them, and not because it will help me find my passion. That's a wrong idea, okay? The idea that, oh, you should congratulate them for their success just because it's a nice thing and not because something good will happen to you. We say it's a wrong idea. It's not bad for something good to happen to you. Okay? That's all right. And if the only way you can make that happen is to be good to someone else, then God bless. You know, what's the problem with that? You see? That's okay. And anyway, you can't avoid it. If you congratulate others for their successes, if you rejoice in other people's achievements, you must become more passionate. You can't stop it. Someone will put the envelope in your backpack in the yoga class. You can't make an announcement everywhere you go, I don't want people putting envelopes in my backpack. You know, it's going to happen. You can't stop it, okay? And if you are, if you participate in other people's success, if you celebrate other people's achievements, your passion will come to you whether you want it or not. So what should your motivation be? It should be, I'm going to congratulate this person because it will make them happy. That's motivation number one. It will make them happy. It's more fun to have people come up to you and say, oh, Geshe-la, you gave a great talk, than to come up to you and say, you gave a great talk and I'm jealous of you and I wish you would break your leg tonight. It will make them happy if you congratulate them. Everyone smiles when someone tells them they did a good job. Even the toughest, nastiest people, you say, you did a great job, and they go, they can't help it. You know, they don't want to smile, but a little thing comes, you know, and then they're like, you know, and you can, you know, congratulate them, and it will make them happy. No matter who they are, thank them. No matter who they are, they will feel happier. Okay, so my motivation is that you should be happy. I have a second agenda here, and that's I should have my passion come to me. My new passion should rise in my heart because of doing this. Because of thanking you and congratulating you, I pray that my new passion will come into my heart. And that's not a bad motivation. That's fine. It doesn't cost them anything. Okay? It's all right. Get out of the mode of thinking it's wrong to have something nice happen to you. Okay, that's okay. Okay. Third motivation. if people find out that I was looking for a new passion in my life in my later years, and they find out that I did get a new passion, and if they find out that I got it because of using this method, then that will affect everybody in my life. I gave the example in the yoga studio. If you've been looking for a new boy, I didn't know the word. I was saying chunky, and somebody told me, not chunky, Geshe-la, hunky. She said, I don't want a chunky boyfriend, I want a hunky boyfriend. Okay, so if you want a hunky boyfriend, and you've been looking for one for a couple of years, and everybody, your friends know, right? They know. Because you go out, you say you want to go to a movie, and they say yes, and they say, do you want to bring somebody with you? And you're like, I wish. You know, and then, so suddenly you show up with this hunky boyfriend. Then they're going to ask, what happened? You know, how did that happen? And you're going to say, I use this new method that I heard. It's better than Lancome. And you go to a nursing home, and you help a lonely person, and then a hunky guy comes to you, you know, like that. And if you want the chunky guy, you have to give junk food to the lonely person. But that's another thing. But what I'm saying is that step three of your motivation should be, if I try a new method of making things happen in my life, and if it works, then I will become a living example for others. You see? They will look at me and say, she did it. I can do it. You see? And then by extension, you're helping everybody. And then that chain that causes a chain reaction. You see? If one person makes $250 million, they can get up in front of 50 other people and say, I can teach you how to do it. And then those people get excited and they go teach other people. And then pretty soon, everybody in the world is out looking for lonely people to help. And then what happens? You see? Then what happens? You see? So your third level of your motivation should be, I'm going to help this person to make them happy. By the way, I will benefit. My new passion will come to me. And the third one is, if I could start something big here. I could start something big here. You know, if I succeed, then other people will get turned on, and then pretty soon everybody will be like standing outside the nursing homes, waiting for a ticket. You know, if you go to 31 Flavors, right, you have to take a ticket. You go to Jamba Juice near the mall in Santa Monica, you gotta take a ticket, right? Because it's hot. So there'll be a ticket thing outside of the nursing homes, and you'll have to take a ticket and wait. And the world will be happier. The world will be a happier place. Okay? So that's your motive. Kunlong. Then Dushe. Dushe means understand what's going on. Understand the process. This is one of the most important ways to speed up a seed. Okay? If you really want to speed up a seed, study the process more. The more familiar you are with the process, the faster the seed works. Seeds planted in ignorance or by mistake or by good luck, they don't grow. They don't grow very fast. That's why some generous people don't get rich. Okay? They don't understand the process. If you ask them, are you realize you're planting a seed by giving away that money? They say, what are you talking about? You know, and you're saying, did you realize you just did the thing that would speed it up? And they're like, I don't know, we'll speed up what? You know? And so the more you understand the process, the faster it works. Okay? The more cognizant you are of what's going on, the faster it will grow. Okay? That's cool. So you're in a good position. Read the Diamond Cutter book. Okay? Try to get the book. You can get a used one on Amazon for like $4. Okay? I'm not trying to make money off a book. And study it. And then you'll be able to do it with understanding, more understanding. So that's Shi, Samba, Kunlong, Dushe, and then Nyomong. Nyomong in this case means do it with love. Do it with love, okay? And the highest form of love here is that is born of your understanding, okay? The highest form of love here is born from your understanding. If I do this, if I engender my passion by taking joy, celebrating other people's successes. And if other people catch on to that method, then what would happen in the world? Some kind of love for other people. You see? Think how happy everybody would be if everybody who wasn't old was standing outside the nursing homes, and everybody who was old was standing inside the nursing homes. And the coolest thing that the first group of people could think of would be to visit the second group of people. And think how cool things would be. You see? And then some kind of love comes into your heart. And we call that ultimate love. In Buddhism, it's called bodhicitta, right? It's kind of like a vision of what would happen if everybody was doing this. And if you do it with that, it's a lot more powerful. And that's the highest kind of love. Okay, that's a high kind of love. Yeah. Oh, okay. She's Sampa Jorwa Kundo Jorwa. Jorwa means, how should we say? You have to carry the thing out. You have to follow through with the thing, okay? You do get points from wanting to help someone. You get points. You get points for intending to help someone. But if you don't carry it out and you don't carry through, it doesn't count. Normally, people poop out halfway through. Okay? Normally, people poop out halfway through. You must follow through. So you can say follow through. If you decide to build a clinic for somebody in Nicaragua, it must be brought to fruition. You must see the first person enter that clinic and get their first toothbrush or whatever the clinic is giving away. And then you can go home. You see? You have to finish the... You can't bail out after the framing of the building, you see? You've got to be there for the whole... Till the thing is ready, turnkey, then you're done. You know, and so you have to follow through. You can't... And that's where a lot of us fail in this method, okay? In this program, a lot of us will fail halfway through helping somebody else. So beware of that. The seed will go faster if you conclude that, if you carry out what you intended, okay? Although you do get points for intention, all right? Even if for some reason you can't carry it out, like you run out of money, and you just physically can't carry it out, you still get a lot of seeds, all right? But the seeds will be faster if you arrange the money ahead of time so that it doesn't run out. Okay. Last thing. Then we gotta go on to blockers, okay? Then we got like 10 minutes for blockers. Tartuk, say tartuk. Tartuk means how do you wrap it up? You know, what's the wrap-up? And what this refers to is taking joy in your own successes. Okay, so we've been talking about taking joy in other people's successes. But it's extremely important, and the karmic seed won't work as fast unless you take joy in your... You have to celebrate your successes also. It's not enough to go around congratulating other people for their successes. In this program, in this system, Diamond Cutter, you must take joy in your own achievements also. Meaning your own virtuous achievements, okay? The goodness that you do. So in this case, in the case of like helping someone open a clinic, right? You fly back to Washington State or wherever you live, and you know, you go home and you sit in your house and you try to consciously bring to mind frequently what a good thing you've done. So you pat yourself on the back mentally over and over. Every time you consciously recall a kindness that you have done for someone else, you plant a seed in your mind which is practically equal to that kindness. So people ask me, how did you double your company every year? You know, it's not possible. It's not possible physically to house 100 workers and then 200 and then 400 and then 800, right? In the course of 4 years. It's not possible to expand a building that fast. It's not possible to train people that or hire people that fast. How did you do that? How did you get things to double and quadruple and 16-uple? You know? How did you do that? And the trick is, tartu, the trick is, after you've performed a kindness for someone else, what do you call it? What do you call it when you keep your mind, someone hurts you and you...
Resentment?
What? Yeah, it's like you harbor it. Yeah, but now it's the opposite, you see? You're not letting go what a good feeling you have about yourself, you know? You just don't let it go. And it's not pride, okay? It's not wrong. It's an honest recognition that you have done a goodness. And the more you cogitate, contemplate, there's a word, I can't remember. It's a fancy word. Anyway, the more you mull it over in your mind, that's not very fancy, okay. The more you think it over at home, quietly, by yourself, sitting around the kitchen table in the evening when no one else is around, and in your mind you say, you know, my life is becoming more meaningful. I'm doing something of meaning. You know, I'm kind of on the right track now. I feel like better. I go to prison. We do prison work whenever they let us in. And it's kind of scary, you know. Our last assignment, me and Christine and some other people, was cell block 3. It's 1,000 prisoners. There's only 2 kinds of prisoners there, sex offenders and gang members. You know, and then we walk in and we're like, you know, and we teach yoga and we teach them this stuff. And then we walk out and you feel so good about yourself, you know, when you walk out, when you get out and you're like, oh, they didn't kill me and I did a good thing today. You feel it. You feel different in your bones. You feel really happy, okay? And then bring that to mind constantly. And then the karma is much more powerful. Much more powerful. And it's pleasant. You know? It's a good meditation. Why? We spend our whole rumination time. That's it. We ruminate on the harms people have done to us. We ruminate on the guy who's suing me. We ruminate on the wife who left me. We ruminate on bad experiences in our life. We ruminate on the creepy boss we have at work. You know, we spend our time ruminating on those things. In this system, you're turning it around. You see, you are ruminating on the good things you've done and the nice things you've seen. And then that doesn't leave you time to do the other ones. You're too busy to think about the people who hurt you. And then you're just making good karma. If you want to destroy, you know, you want to do the opposite? If you want to destroy seeds in your mind wholesale, if you want to burn the total variety of good seeds in your mind, be angry. Mm-hmm. Ruminate on people who hurt you. You know, go home and consider how people have been creepy to you today or this month, people who've done harm to you. And this is a wholesale destruction of all good seeds in your mind. If you're interested in suffering, and being unhappy, and getting sick physically, and shortening your life, then think about people who've hurt you. Go home and meditate on people who've hurt you, because that's what we do. We spend all our time thinking about people who did us wrong, you know. And now you're working on the opposite. You go home, and you're meditating on the nice things you saw today, and the nice things you did today. That's tattoo. Much, much more powerful. Much more powerful seeds. Every time you take an honest pleasure in a goodness you have done, you plant a seed which is almost equal to that goodness. If you did that over a period of time, you could get a company to double every year for 15 years. Fastest growing manufacturing company in the history of New York City. In 300 years. Fastest growing manufacturing company. Unreasonable and impossible doubling. How? You just go home. You sit down and you think about what the nice things you're doing. It doesn't cost you anything. You don't have to, no sweat. You don't break a sweat, hopefully. You know, and you're just being happy. And then the seeds multiply in your mind and the results multiply. Okay, we have 6 minutes for blockers. You have in your hands the first 15% of a translation I did from a variety of sources on methods for removing old karmic seeds in your mind that you put there before you got this lecture. Okay? In the old days, when you used to go home and feel angry about your ex-husband, you see? Over and over. Okay? You planted lots of negative seeds. They are rocks sitting under the ground And the new seeds are not going to have enough room to grow. Or they'll grow in a stunted way. Jesus said the same thing. He said, throw seed on the stone or throw seed on the soil and watch the difference. See, so we must remove the old negative seeds, which we planted before we knew any better, and which we will plant in the future because we can't control ourselves. So we better learn a system to remove the negative seeds that we planted when we were young and foolish, and which we're going to plant in the future when we can't control ourselves, no matter how many years we study. Okay, we're just talking about me. Okay. And that's, say, tengi to. Number sun jimbe to. Nyambo kundu chupe. Oh, sorry. That's too long. Let's try. Nyepa. Le. Larn. Dope. To. Number three. And then nyambo. Kundu. Chupe. To. These are topshi. Topshi means four powers, the four forces, which can destroy an old karma. Okay? If you did some really bad thing when you were younger, you know, you hurt somebody. We do things by accident, right? We do things by accident. When I was in college, I was involved in an abortion. And later I found out it was a bad karma. And then I've worked that off. I've destroyed that seed. Quite consciously, because I don't want that on my... I don't want it ripening as a car accident or something worse, you know? I took care of that seed, okay? So, some even big mistakes you've made in your life, you can remove the power completely, okay? There's no such thing as a mistake which cannot be corrected with the four powers. So I gave you a reading, you can go through it slowly. You can read it. I couldn't afford to print the whole 150 pages for everybody. So you can go online and get it for free. Okay? This is the first 100 and... What's the first 25 pages as a teaser? But if you get into it and you're serious about it, you can go online. You can talk to one of the people on staff, like Rob, or, I don't know, Will, and... the guys from the LA Center, Lauren. Okay, it's practice module 6. Okay? It's the reading for practice module 6. And it's free online and you can pull it up and read it, okay? But here's the essence of it, okay? The first power is to review what you understand about seeds. Okay? Review what you understand about seeds. In your mind, go over the process. If I let this seed stay in my mind, I will suffer. If I let this seed stay in my mind untended, I will suffer. Okay? So just go over what you understand about seeds. If I leave this abortion seed in my mind, something will happen to me. I'll get into a car accident or something will happen. I need to take care of it now. Okay? That's number one. Number two is feel some sort of healthy regret. Okay? Some sort of healthy regret. You know, I'm sorry I did that. It was dumb. Okay? It was dumb. I was trying to be happy, but I was just planting a seed that's going to hurt me. Okay? Like, intelligent regret. This is not the kind of guilt which paralyzes you. We are not looking for paralyzing guilt. Where you sit there and say, I'm a bad person, you know, I did something really bad. Oh, there is no health in me. You know, I have done those things which I ought not to have done. You know, don't go into there. I made a mistake, and it's going to hurt me. And I'm sorry for that. And I've got to fix it. Okay? It should be a sense of, what do you call it? I can fix it, you know. I can do it, you know. Like empowerment. No, I can fix this thing. I can set this thing right. Okay, number two. Number three is the most important power. If you don't remember the other three, try to remember this one. I will not do this thing again. I will not do this thing again. The decision not to repeat a mistake destroys the original mistake. Okay, it's very beautiful. The decision not to repeat a past mistake destroys the power of the original seed. It is the single most powerful force which destroys the original seed. I will not do this thing again. And every time an authentic teacher gets to this part, they always say, with big stuff you can say never again. Like, I will never be involved in an abortion again. I know that. I can say that. I will never be involved in it. I won't let it get to that point. It's not going to happen. Okay? That I can say. But there's other smaller deeds that we do that we can't promise for the rest of our life. It would be foolish. We would be, if you say, I'll never yell at my wife again, you just created a new seed called lying. Right? So, you know, it's foolish to set, the great lamas, like my lama, they say, set a time limit. Set a time limit. You know, I won't yell at her for the next hour, and I'm leaving for Starbucks for 2 hours. Just to cover yourself. Okay? And I'll tell you a joke, you know. I do this practice in the morning, every day, during my meditation, right? I do this practice. And I decide how long is it going to be before I... How long can I promise not to have this angry thought again? Then I think to myself, angry thought about what? And then I think about the person who made me angry. And then that makes me angry before I finish the process of the four powers. Okay? Which is really cute, right? So you might want to make it really short. During the thinking on the four powers, I get angry again. Okay, anyway, set a time limit that's doable so you don't create a new bad karma. Then the last one is Nyambokonichupito means, you know, in school, it happened to me one day. I was sitting in Mr. Riley's history class in the third row to the left, back in the back, and he was talking about South American history, and I was designing a new paper airplane on my desk, you know? And, you know, it's different folds and different new folds and stuff, and I was like, God, this is really going to be good, you know? You know, this one is it, you know? And then I just forgot where I was, you know? And I picked it up, and I stood up. And then, you know, he was kind of a bad guy. And he made me stay after school and write, you know, I will not fly paper airplanes in Mr. Riley's class like 100 times. It took a long time. And that's the fourth power. Okay? So think of some makeup activity. Think of some makeup activity. If you were involved in an abortion, for example, you could, and I did, commit to help a youth group for a while. So I had a youth group in New Jersey in hell for like 10 years. But I'm not saying 10 years, you know, it could be 6 months. But you help out at a children's hospital or something like that. Something that's remotely connected to the action you did. Okay? So like, you know, if you burn down somebody's house, then you can join the firefighters for, you know what I mean, like that. It should be something similar. Okay? Last thing to say, then we're done, okay? And Lauren will be giving you certificates for the completion of this, okay? But I'm praying that in the future we can do the whole 12 levels, and then it's a lot tougher and a lot more productive, and you'll actually go out on retreat with us for 3 days, and you'll come back with a lot more ammunition and a much nicer certificate. Okay. The best form of the last power is to study more. Okay? Is to read the Diamond Cutter book or read some other books that teach about the mental seeds. And that's the most powerful. Go online. We have on the knowledge base, I think we have, if I'm not mistaken, it's 7,000 or 8,000 hours of these talks for free. Okay? And you can go hear this talk done in Puerto Rico and Antarctica, and you know, you can go hear it 6 times or something, and it's free. And that's Aura. Where is Aura? Love Aura. She's She's with the baby. Can you get her? She had one baby. This is her other baby. She just had a baby in January, right? I was there. If you don't appreciate your mom, go watch a baby be born. That's the first one I ever saw. And I was there for 24 hours, and then she went another 24 hours. And okay, anyway, that's Aura. That's her baby, Bella. Isabella. And so Aura took charge of this knowledge-based thing. It's like 7,000 hours of free video, audio, from many teachers, like Lama Marut's there, and many other teachers are there. By the way, if you're teaching, we'd love to have your stuff on there, okay? Anyone who's teaching will put your stuff up there. But she's doing that. And then she raises funds for that. I don't know, what am I supposed to pitch? You can talk to her. Afterward. She's making these little iPod shuffle things that clip onto your lapel, and the earphone goes in here, and you can hear today's talk, yesterday's talk, the day before, and talk to her. And you just stick it in your ear. And then she hits you up for a donation, and I think it's voluntary, right? Whatever you want, right?
So, and if you don't want to, you can go get it online for free. So
yeah. She's selling water at the side of the river. So that's all. The best way to do the fourth power is you can help a children's hospital, but if you also dedicate some time to understanding these principles further, it's the fastest, it's the most powerful way to destroy an old seed. So by using these four powers, you can destroy any seed, no matter how severe, in your being. The nastiest, dirtiest thing you've ever done can be destroyed with these four powers, okay? And you will be clean of it. You will be finished with it. My father got lung cancer, and I spent the last few weeks with him, and we went through this many times. It's good. It's like a Catholic, what do you call that? As someone dies. Last rites. Yeah, so we went through the events of his life, and we worked on them with these four powers. And he died very nicely. Okay, so like that, you can purify your heart like this. And then the soil, it's like my garden, right? After like 6 months of digging rocks out, you wouldn't believe, you know? I just planted one rose and I had like a mountain of rocks that came out of this little hole. But then the soil is fit for the new seeds. You see what I mean? So work on this. Read the reading, the translation, and then work on it. And take care of all the nasty old stuff you ever do. Nothing is unfixable. And fix it, you will feel a sense of lightness. First, you'll have a small disaster. You'll get into a small car accident. You'll get a bad cold. You'll pull your shoulder out in yoga. And be happy. The major karma has ripened as a minor karma. And that's supposed to happen. You're supposed to have someone was listening to this teaching in their car, driving down the highway. The car blew up. The engine blew up. They were so happy. They said, Geshe-la, it happened right away. I got to this part in the class on the audio, and my car blew up. You know, the engine overheated and melted and caught on fire, and I pulled over, and can you send me a new CD? It was really funny. So, you know, there will be a small problem, and then feel happy. Then you have to feel light. You will feel light. You will know when the karma is gone. Because it's been on your conscience all this time, since you did it, you know. And you will feel light, and you will feel happy. And then the ground is ready to put the new karma, of rejoicing in other people's successes, like that. And then, of course, then you'll have the opposite problem, which is too many passions in your life. And you can't sleep because you're doing projects all night. Okay. We do a custom, okay? Tradition in our lineage that at the end of a good time, we give away the karma to other people. Okay? So we can think all the people in LA. You have to teach them. You will become their teacher. If you keep up this line of thought and you keep up this activity, you will become the next person sitting up here. That's the goal of this thing. So to make that happen, we will give away the karma of today. Okay? So you put your hands like this. And we'll, those of you who know the prayer can come with me. Okay, you ready? 1, 2. Hewa di ke loku sanam yeshe sozokshi sanam yeshe nechowe dhamba kuni toba. Thank you. Thank you for coming. It felt really good, and the space is beautiful. I'd like to thank ACI LA and all the people. I know I saw the photos of them working on the space, building it, and it's the first time I've ever seen the space. They did a good job.